Hey there. This book club podcast is for teams tackling issues of both human capital and financial capital, especially now in the wake of mass automation of factory, retail, and office jobs alike. I'm Esther Tang, an avid reader and manufacturer of turbochargers. Almost a decade ago, I came across SRC, a wildly successful company in Missouri, USA. SRC harnesses human participation in an extraordinary hive mind method that they call the Great Game of Business, or GGOB. Theirs is an engaging and effective business operating system that works as a game. And it's been quietly helping hundreds of businesses leapfrog ahead in widespread wealth creation. You are now in a faraway foreign land called Rufferonia. The most popular sport here is rough ball. Being the friendly person that you are, you decide to try this game. After all, you want to make friends, get invited to dinners, exercise, and make the most of your time in Rufferonia. So first things first. You ask yourself, how to play? How do rough ball teams score points? What are the positions on the team? How does each position tag team with other players? Are there even teams, or is it more like freeze tag, where it's every man for himself? In the distance, you notice a group seems to be gathering for a game. They're laughing and stretching. Gazing at their warm-up, you try to get a sense of whether rough ball is a game of endurance, like a marathon, or maybe it's more a sport of fast, sharp maneuvers, like ice hockey. Or maybe rough ball is actually a quiet, focused, contemplative game, like golf. Suddenly, one of the Rufferonian players motions to you. Looks like they want you to play. Now, this is exciting. You want to be upfront with this new friend, so you greet him. Hey, I'm not from here. I'll join the team, but you need to teach me how to play. The Rufferonian replies, sounds great. All you need to do is catch the ball and throw it at the red pole. You won't get bitten. Did he say bitten? But before you get a reply, a whistle blows. The rough ball is lobbed to you. You snatch it from the air and look frantically for a red pole. There are at least two red poles and a third one that could pass for brown. You aim for the closest red pole and throw as hard as you can. All eyes watch the ball arc, then bank off the pole. Your new teammates erupt in a cheer. Apparently, this was an excellent performance by you. Why exactly it was excellent, you have no idea. But who cares? They love you. And before you know it, another rough ball is coming right at you again. You snatch it and throw once more at the same red pole. Bing! It hits hard, and again, a huge roar of approval from your team and even a few onlookers. Feels amazing. Hehe. Looks like the guy from Florida is gonna have a fan club soon. Over the next hour, you feel increasingly comfortable as you repeat your performance the 17th time, the 18th time, the 19th time. Your team is probably winning by like 20 points, maybe even 100. That's why you're completely caught off guard when, after beaning your 20th red pole, someone lunges for your right leg and sinks his teeth into your calf. Ah! You scream bloody murder. What the heck is going on? When did your leg become a tasty morsel? This peculiar story I just told with a made-up sport in a made-up land is an allegory. It has nothing to do with cannibalism. The story represents what it's like when most people join a new company, and also what it continues to be like years later. The fact is, most people don't know how their company functions as a money system. They don't see their company's big picture, nor does their company intend to teach them. Worse, many employees labor away under the illusion that doing their individual tasks diligently is enough to keep them safely employed. Their logic might go something like this. If I'm a payables staff accountant, then I just process the heck out of the payables. Why should I care about warehouse inventory? What's it gonna do with me in payables? Well, listeners, I'm here to say that it is not enough to only keep to your immediate tasks. That would be the sign of a weak organization whose lunch will be eaten one day, perhaps even by a GGOB company. If you can already see the glaring problem with learning a new sport without being taught how to actually win, then congratulations. That is the main lesson of this episode covering Chapter 4. You can skip ahead to the Chapter 5 in the book. But if the point is still hazy, let's revisit the allegory. When you were learning rough ball, the only leadership instruction you received was to catch the ball and throw it at a red pole. Points tallied, strategies for offense, plays for defense, even what hitting the red pole actually represented, none of that was included in your onboarding to the sport. In fact, a more experienced senior teammate even assured you that if you just did what he told you to do, all would be well. He made it seem like it wasn't your place to know any more than that. So tell me why you found yourself getting a chunk bitten from your leg. Was it simply random craziness in the game? Or could it be that you didn't learn enough about how the game actually works? Because guess what? There's a rule in roughball that might have interest you to know. A red pole is no longer in play after the 19th hit. In life, we don't get a free pass from rules just because we weren't aware of them. I learned this the hard way during a tax audit. In Chapter 4, Jack cites an example of a man on an assembly line drilling holes. His team leader tells him the goal is to drill without defects. And this man does just that. Day in and day out, he hardly ever messes up. Then one fine morning, the man hears that his company is filing for Chapter 11, bankruptcy protection. This shocking news confounds him because he knows for a fact that not only is his work output nearly perfect, but so is the work of many of his coworkers. The man is crushed to think that all their diligence and hard work would result in a failed factory. Blame for such counterintuitive, catastrophic outcome rests somewhere, but definitely not with him or anyone else who busted their butts shift after shift. The more the man thinks about it, the more frustration builds. He would have done anything to help the company. Some pretty good years, maybe even the best years of his life, were spent given to the company. All he's guilty of is showing up for work and keeping his nose to the grindstone every damn day. Why wasn't there any warning? This is what it's like for many employees from day onwards with their employers. People are brought in, parked at a desk or assembly line, and told to focus on their individual tasks. And that's pretty much it. Their bosses tell them, hey, keep your eye on the prize. But ask each person what the prize is, and answers are all over the map. To a sales guy, the prize-winning results look like top-notch customer service. To a warehouse guy, prize-winning results is efficient inventory management. To an assembly line, it's total units produced and accident-free days. To a CEO, maybe it's share price or whatever the board designates that year. While customer service, inventory management, accident-free days, and share price are all useful metrics, they need to be balanced within context. That is, if better customer service means keeping more products in stock, then having a stockpile of units, yes, it would help the sales guy, but it would work against the warehouse manager. A dividend payout might delight shareholders, but as we studied in episode 4, the U.S. manufacturers who did this starting in the late 90s royally screwed over their own ability to innovate. Bye-bye, solar cell manufacturing. In the same way that a healthy human body requires calcium, sodium, and even cobalt, when levels are out of balance, the human organs, they go haywire. You gotta know how much iron is considered healthy versus poisonous. Likewise, the organs, the departments within a business, must keep a healthy balance to keep living. The IT department should care about the research department, just as a liver cares that the kidneys remain healthy. After all, the big picture is one body, one ecosystem. All the constituents either live together or die together. From the very first day of work, newbies joining a company that uses the Great Game Management Operating System are taught not only their own individual jobs, but also how their job feeds into the big picture. They know how the company makes money, how cash from their sales activities is spent in the cost centers, reinvested in CapEx and research, used to pay debt and taxes, and then finally used to enrich themselves as shareholders. Talk to someone at a GGOB company about retained earnings, and it's like they're analyzing a favorite baseball team's performance. Listeners, whether we want to strive for success in business or sports, even if it's rough ball, start by learning what the big picture looks like. And that's it for this episode. If you want to win, make sure employees understand not only their individual positions, but also how to win in the big picture. Winning battles means nothing if the war is lost. In our next episode, we will discuss the biggest fear CEOs have when adopting the Great Game, opening up their financial books. Thank you to Jack Stack and everyone at SRC for inspiring me. Thank you to my family for encouraging me. Thank you, dear listeners, for thinking deliberately about what healthy capitalism looks like. This podcast was written and produced by myself out of personal interest. It reflects my own opinions, and I'd love to hear yours. My contact info is in the show notes. Until next time, remember that you still count and you still matter to me.